This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, well, to speak for yourself, I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if Gronk was the greatest tight end ever.
And James Harrison will weigh in on all the latest Steelers drama. Well, we start every day with a Whitlock. So what you got today, big dog?
Yesterday, Duke and Central Florida competed in one of the most compelling and exciting NCAA tournament games we've ever seen. It was David versus Goliath. Only this time, Goliath slayed a 7'6" giant and saved the big dance from irrelevancy. The top-seeded Blue Devils won by a point because two of their freshman stars, Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett, bulldozed UCF players on back-to-back buckets in the game's final seconds. Duke's superior talent prevailed on Sunday. I'm not sure it will next weekend. Coach Johnny Dawkins' mid-major nights exposed the Blue Devils as a better story than team. Great stories usually have shocking endings. Great teams win championships. It's the difference between Rocky Balboa and Rocky Marciano.
Okay.
You know what made Rocky an unforgettable movie? A character more famous than the real-life Rocky? Rocky Balboa lost to Apollo Creed. Rocky Marciano never lost. Duke is going to lose in this tournament. UCF proved you only have to defend three of Duke's players. Next weekend, Virginia Tech or LSU or Michigan State is going to deploy the same defensive strategy as UCF and Duke. And Duke will fall. The Knights pretended that Duke is a three-man team, Williamson, Barrett, and Cam Reddish, and no one else exists. I've never seen that done to a great team. I've seen a great team have one player so dominant, Luol Cinder, Bill Walton, Patrick Ewing, Larry Bird, that it takes two or three defenders to slow them. But UCF's strategy wasn't driven by fear of Zion. It was driven by Duke's glaring lack of depth and poor shooting. Zion Williamson is the best story to hit college basketball since the Fab Five. He is as compelling as Chris Webber, Juwan Howard, Jalen Rose, Jimmy King, and Ray Jackson. But Zion won't experience the same level of success as the five freshmen who played for the national title. Sunday's game felt like the pinnacle for Zion in terms of college hoops. He made a driving layup over a skyscraper to pull Duke within a point with seconds left to play. He finished with 32 points in a game we'll never forget. That was Zion's one shining moment. He and Duke are done. All right, joining the desk now, former UCLA head coach and Indiana hoops legend in both the college and high school ranks, Steve Alford, and Fox Sports Radio's Aaron Torres. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Is Duke a better story than team?
I'm flanked by too much basketball genius to keep this long-winded. But watching the number one seed UVA team go out there and struggle in the first half against Gardner Webb, you got to understand that matchups really matter, especially in the bracket system. So Duke is a great team. At any given time, they're going to have three of the top five NBA picks on the court. So you got to respect this team. And, you know, you talk about one and dones. You talk about a younger core of a team. Maturity comes into play. You see that seed, even though this is the second round, you start to look at the seed and you start looking at the talent levels. We're human beings. You start to really look at a guy like, can they really compete? So I saw it at UVA, and we've seen it with Duke. A scare is not alarming as long as you respond to that scare and it's a wake-up call.
They got some weak links out there.
I completely agree with you, Jason. You look at that team, first of all, even coming into the tournament, we knew statistically
they were the worst three-point shooting team ever that we consider a serious national championship contender. North Dakota State, not just UCF yesterday, North Dakota State. Did you watch that game?
Yeah, no, I did.
It was ugly for about 35 minutes until they well, 25 minutes until they realized, okay, we're Duke. We got to put this thing away. I am totally on board with you. I just look at this Duke team, great individual talent. Zion, I feel like more and more they're relying on Zion. This guy had 32 points yesterday. Nobody else had more than 16. I think, I don't know if they're going to lose this weekend. They are not winning the national championship, though.
Steve?
Well, you're my guy. It is an honor to be on your show.
We're
Indiana guys. I have 20 minutes from Ball State.
This is so heaven for me.
but I don't know if I'm buying all of it. Obviously, I think Duke is a great story, but I did spend 2 days being unemployed. I got to go spend 2 days with Coach K and the Blue Devil program. And those three guys, it's not like UCF and Johnny. And I love Johnny to death. He's my guy. They've gone through the ACC. It's not like Johnny's come up with this miracle formula of staying in games. They've only lost two games with Zion healthy, and that was an overtime loss at home to Syracuse and a one-possession game to Gonzaga. So you go through the ACC like they've done and all those things with Zion. He is so good. I think he's so much better than anybody else in college basketball. And they're not going to run into anybody else now protecting the paint like Taco Fall. And so you have the 7'6" guys gone. Duke is the number one team in the country inside the arc. They're also the worst team in the bracket still left of the 16 outside the arc. So, yes, if you can make them become a three-point shooting team, I think you got a chance to beat them. But that's a heavy load when you're saying you're going to stop Reddish, you're going to stop Zion, you're going to stop R.J. Barrett. These three are easily the top five picks in the NBA draft coming up. So, yes, you've got to guard three guys, but they're really good. And Trey Jones is a guy that can orchestrate things at a high level, both offensively and defensively.
So I was fooled a bit yesterday in your opinion that UCF has a 7'6" guy. No one else does. But have teams been defending Duke in that fashion where they just acted like Jones didn't exist.
Right. And you may see that coming. Virginia Tech's only played him once.
Yep.
Virginia Tech beat him at Virginia Tech. So it'll be interesting what Buzz and his staff come up with after watching that tape, because it's really the first game where they're basically playing Trey Jones from me to you.
Yeah.
And so.
And farther.
And it works. and it works. But the 7'6" guy is mobile. He changes things. He's a special player. And I don't think we give UCF enough credit. Played in a very good league this year, a four-bid league, and they did a lot of good things. And obviously Dawkins had a tremendous game, which I'm very proud of for the Dawkins family. But I still wouldn't – I don't think there's anybody left in the 16 field that are saying, Duke's out. You're going to have to play really well to beat Duke.
And you really can't overstate what Taco Fall means in terms of a defensive challenge. When you're going offensively against him, he's top 40 – on the planet in terms of height. Like, of all people that exist, of all the billions, he's top 40. And so look at Zion's numbers against him. You see that he went out there.
1%.
I mean, that's the point one of the 1%. He's 7 of 18 when he was on the court. Then he's 5 of 6 right. when he's gone. It was just that simple. So now no other team can roll out that anomaly like that. I think it's going to be a little easier for them to go after it.
But do you think, though, even as great as Zion was, do you think at this point, though, I feel like the blueprint is not only that they can't shoot, I think those other guys are playing a little bit scared right now. You mentioned Trey Jones, R.J. Barrett 6 for 15 yesterday. This stat stood out to me. Zion had more than half of Duke's foul shots yesterday, which means nobody's getting into the paint. Nobody's getting other guys to foul them. I just look at this team. I don't think they've been the same since that Zion injury. I think the other guys are playing timid. Zion's awesome, but at some point you got to have somebody else.
You got to believe in Coach K. I mean, that's when the coach grazzers everyone, resets you, and says, hey, guys, we have great individual talent. I'm a great coach. I don't even have to say that. You get it. Let's bring this as a collective together, because it's hard to go out there and have repeat subpar performances when you have a coach of that magnitude.
But I think Aaron's point is, and Steve, I'll ask you this, Zion gets injured and goes out, Duke struggled. That can undermine the confidence of the rest of the team.
Absolutely.
And particularly when they're young and it's like, man, we're just not the same without Zion, and it kind of exposes you, and maybe that's what they're dealing with.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody, they are dealing with depth issues. They're not a deep team. So you get into now the Sweet 16, you got to stay away from foul trouble. You got to stay away from any kind of minor injury because you're really only playing seven guys now, almost six, and five of them are, three of them are playing 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So, but I do think Trey Jones, I give Trey Jones more credit. I recruited the young man. I think he's special. And I think this
he
is the,
shook
this, but this was the first time we kind of did the same thing. I remember way back in the day with the Warriors with John Stockton because, and John's a Hall of Famer because he wanted to get the ball to Malone. He wanted to orchestrate things. He didn't want to shoot. And we kind of forced him into being a shooter because not that he can't shoot, it's just not in his DNA. And Trey Jones is like that. I think Trey's going to have to do more offensively to help them take some of that pressure off. But he really starts their defense. And getting Duke to play slow is not going to be easy for anybody.
All right, this tournament is a one-trick pony. It's Zion. Mm. And the rest of this tournament has just been favorites. I think yesterday all the favorites won. Basically, it's the top 16 seeds plus Oregon and maybe what is Houston a five? No, Houston I think is a
Auburn. Auburn was the other
Auburn.
One.
Yeah. Auburn's a five seed.
Yeah.
I don't. If not for Zion, we'd be taking a dump on this tournament. No Cinderella, no upsets.
Yeah.
Does this tournament miss a Cinderella?
Yeah, well, look, I think every tournament misses a Cinderella when you get something like this. We haven't seen this since 1985. Top three seeds all have advanced. So when you think about it, the story is David versus Goliath. We don't want to see Goliath versus Goliath. That's not the same story. So there is a lost rooting interest from the Cinderella aspect. At the same time, there is a moment where we want to see the best play the best. And if that's really what you want to say in flipping a coin, well, you got exactly what you wanted, and we haven't seen that in 30
You miss Sister Jean.
I miss Sister Jean. Yeah, I miss a little of those runs. Yeah, I mean, it's the casual fan who gets invested with those.
I was going to say, what's wrong with Goliath versus Goliath?
Yeah.
That's my thing. Like, you know, we're going to get LSU, Michigan State. LSU has a bunch of NBA guys. Michigan State, you know they're tough because we've seen what Tom Izzo does in the huddle. So you know those guys are mentally tough, right? And the winner of that game might get Duke. We might get Carolina, Kentucky, another regional. To me, I like Goliath versus Goliath. I don't know why college basketball is the only sport where we want the little guy. Like, nobody's rooting for the Brooklyn Nets in this upcoming NBA playoff. Sorry, no offense to Nets fans.
It happened.
I mean, maybe not the Clippers either, but.
Oh, wait, I'm kidding.
But, like, you know, so, like, to me, I'd rather see Duke versus Kentucky, or Kentucky versus Carolina, Duke versus LSU, Michigan. That's me, though.
Well, the matchups are great. You're going to see really good basketball, basketball at its highest level. I think that's what the first two rounds are about. The first two rounds are about everybody's watching all day long for the upset and for the Cinderella. But the Cinderella kind of loses its – as you get into now where you're playing the best of the best, I want to see good basketball. And you're going to get to see, I think, eight games that are at a high, high level. Oregon's a 12 seed. Mm-hmm. They were in the Final Four 2 years ago. They were beat up and hurt. You got a healthy Wooten now. Pritchard's playing confident, and he's one of the best point guards, I think, in the country. They're a very dangerous team. You got Kansas out of it. Kansas was set to play Carolina in Kansas City. I don't even think the sites matter now. I don't think there's any – where there's a team playing close to home that they get an advantage. As I looked at the brackets, there's 16 teams left. It's all neutral setting. Throw the thing up. Great teams, great basketball ahead of us.
There's an energy loss, though, without a Cinderella. Let's just be real. When a VCU is going out there and you're seeing them in the Final Four, it's just – I guess the every man, the common man, the guy next door really rallies for the Cinderella because, wow, that team looks like it was just four-year players, well-orchestrated. They went out there and did all the things, all the intangibles. They checked those boxes. Right now, we have a fine point of one-and-done teams and basketball factories. That's what's really starting to happen, and I think we're going to just phase away from maybe some of the Cinderellas.
Steve, I want to ask you this. And I know this is not an ideal scenario, but this is probably the first time in your life or in the last 40 years where you just get to watch the NCAA tournament as a fan without being a true insider or looking at – how does that – what is this experience like for you?
I'm blessed. I'd never be on your show. If I was coaching, I wouldn't be on your show. So I'm blessed. But it's been good just to sit back. I've always said I thought it would be great for head coaches to – at certain parts of your career, you get to take a sabbatical. And you get to go – I was able to go watch Michigan State and Coach Izzo. I was able to watch Coach Cal at Kentucky, Coach Barnes at Tennessee, Coach K at Duke. I went down and saw my friend Dan Munson at Long Beach. And you get to see how they do things, whether it's a shoot around, whether it's day before a game, the night film session, and you just get to see, hey, you want to tweak this with your program, you want to do something different. It's like hitting a refresh button and kind of rebooting. So that part of it's been a lot of fun. And spend time with the family, it's been a great thing. But you get to this time of year, you start getting that, you get that itch pretty good to be back.
Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, we're usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. Particularly when I was younger and playing football, I can remember hurting my shoulder and never telling the trainers. That turned into a real problem. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/speak, complete a dynamic online visit, chat with a doctor, and get genuine medication delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy, so take care of it. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/speak. That's GetRoman.com/speak for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/speak.
All right, time now for a big story delivered by Papa John's. Whitlock and Wiley, former UCLA head coach Steve Alford is back with us. All right, Steve, somehow Tom Izzo yelling at one of his players, somehow we spun that into a national controversy. You're the perfect person. You played for Bobby Knight. I'm from Indiana. My first job out of college was in Bloomington. I'm someone with a love-hate relationship. I respected right. everything Bob Knight. Anyway, your thoughts on how this Izzo thing even became a controversy?
Well, it's today's era, for one. But Tom is the best of the best of, as far as how he goes about, you know, his thing is about toughness. And you're not going to teach toughness by not keeping kids accountable. And probably what our young men need in this world more than anything is accountability. And Tom does that in his program. I saw it firsthand. And they love Tom. Now, that's why they play so hard. That's why they're tough-minded. The Henry kid, if he was on your set, he'd tell you, I needed that. I might not have believed it at the time, but I know I needed that, and it helps me become a better player. Same way with me under Coach Knight. My dad kicked me out of 6-7 practices in high school. Coach Knight kicked me out of 6 or 7 practices in college. I, at the time, probably mad at both of them, but they both made me better because of their tough approach to keeping me accountable. Whether I'm coming off a good game, good practice, bad practice, I think the best coaches want the best for you, not what you've done or what you've done in the past, but how are you getting better today? And Coach Izzo does that as well as anybody.
Well, it is a different era, so as a present day coach, how mindful are you of these situations and how does it really alter your behavior because the reaction is going to be so different?
Yeah, there's obviously different ways of going about doing it. Different, there's personalities are different with every coach, but you're right, you're in the social media era now. Whether you want to say it's a softer era or not, you know, I'm biased.
You want to say that?
I played in the 80s. I played with the one class in basketball, not 15 classes and everybody gets a state title. You know, I played where it was just one state title. So I appreciate the eras I got to play in, you know, the Jordan era where there was no hand checking. The foul only happened if there was blood drawn. You know, so I appreciated that era. So yeah, we're in a different era and everything gets on TV, everything gets on social media now. And so you can look at a clip it where Coach Izzo gets in somebody's face and you're like, well, why is he being so mean? No, he's just coaching. Yeah. It's just coaching. And I think all the greats have had a personality to where regardless, players know. I knew how Coach Knight was, and I knew he was going to get into me. But ultimately, I knew Coach Knight loved me. I knew Coach Knight appreciated who I was as a person, as a player, and all he was trying to do was get the best out of me. And that's how I appreciated playing for him.
Well, let me earn my journalism degree I don't have. Has college basketball become too soft in this era?
Well, it's hard. That's a hard one. You know, you have enough replays. I mean, look at technology now. Now we spend all this time going to to the scores bench for replay after replay after replay. Back in the day, it was just you played and you took the tough luck, however it is. Now it's all getting corrected. So it's just the way things have changed. And I think what you've seen, players have adjusted, coaches have adjusted, whether you like it or not. You've adjusted things. And now as a coach, when can you have your phones? When can't you have your phones? Because back in the day, if we had these phones, we have some real interesting stories to talk about.
Say it.
Steve, let me ask, as a coach, when you come off the Bob Knight tree as a player, do players and families assume, you're Steve Alford, you must coach like Bobby Knight? And how much of an influence did Coach Knight have on your approach?
Great question. I think early in my career, that was asked a lot. Now I'm 54, I'm 28 years into the business. I've been at four other Division I institutions, starting with Manchester at the Division III level. So now time has kind of passed. Now they don't remember me wearing short shorts. They don't even remember me playing at Indiana because I've gotten older. But I would hope Coach Knight, my dad, Sam Alford, all mentors of mine in the game have really taught me how to go about not just coaching, but how you teach the game. So there's a lot of that that I do. It's just I hope I'm my own person and I have my own personality and I go about doing things my own way as well.
You said you got to spend some time before the tournament with Tom Izzo, Coach K, Rick Barnes at Tennessee. Who do you feel best about that's left in the tournament based off your inside knowledge? Who do you think has the best chance to win it all here?
Wow, that's hard. I love Duke because of their culture. Now, they are beat up a little bit, which is a little bit of concern. But I love their talent as far as if you just say who's got the three best players on a team. You know, Duke's going to be hard to beat from that end. You've got a Hall of Fame coach that's won five already, and now he's within. You know, we talked about that a little bit, is that you start with 68 teams. So now that Cinderella is all the pressure's on the one seeds, the two seeds. Well, now you're down to 16. So if you're still left, you're only worried about 15 teams. You're not worried about almost 70 teams. So now you're not as worried about – there aren't going to be any more upsets now. So I love Duke, but Michigan State's probably the toughest team. Tennessee's got tough experience to them. Kentucky is different. If P.J. Washington's healthy, they've got as much talent top to bottom, and they're young, improving. So I got to probably go on the fence on those because I think all four of them have a chance to win it.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're honored to have you here, and seems like you guys are rekindling some old moments. But you're not coaching right now, and right. The incident in China and the shoplifting scandal, if that didn't occur, you think you'd still be coaching?
That's a hard one. That's a tough one. I do know what happened because of what took place in China. I lost three players. A lot of coaches may lose an injury here, and you get a player back. Before the season, we were getting ready to play Georgia Tech, and before the season ever started, that was our opening game in Shanghai. We lose three players in one day for the rest of the season. And so that's hard. So we had a great recruiting class coming in, but we never got to be with that recruiting class. We only had three of the six get a play. And then when you fast forward it to this year, those guys should have been sophomores. And one Jello left, we returned two of the others, but now they're freshmen. Because they haven't played a game yet. So we went from a team that should have been much more experienced this year to being one of the very inexperienced teams. I think we were the third most inexperienced team in the country. And I think that was part of our slow start, getting off to a slow start, 7-6. And if you look at who we lost to Belmont, NCAA team, we lost to Liberty, around a 32 team, Ohio State in the field, Cincinnati in the field. Those are four really good teams and a tough stretch for a young team. It'd been nice to have them all together, but that's just the way it is, and you got to roll with it. And I know I appreciated my time at UCLA. It's a great institution, and I had a lot of fun there.
Impossible question perhaps to answer, but there's rumors like UCLA is going to back up the Brinks truck and bring in John Calipari, experienced coach, done a lot of winning. What do you think is the most important element UCLA should be looking for in its next head coach?
Yeah, just to try to get that right fit. You know, one of the things they haven't done is gone to a former player. So maybe that's a better fit that can really understand UCLA and understand the climate, understands the pros and the cons. I don't see a Coach Calipari coming this way just because of what he's got going on at Kentucky, and he has everything in line. a lot of things going on there that aren't done at UCLA. So you got to kind of know the UCLA way and the UC system. It is a little bit different than the other places I've been. So maybe finding somebody that has a better understanding of what all that's about is going to be a good fit for them moving forward.
All right, I got a suggestion for them. They should hire LeVar Ball as the head coach. Super Bowl champ James Harrison is with us. Time to play Hot Clock. We'll get each with just 24 seconds to give our hot takes on some of the biggest stories of the day. All right, let's start with huge NFL news, where Rob Gronkowski announced his retirement from football. Gronk's career was cut short by injuries, but we all remember how unstoppable he was when healthy. Marcellus,
yes,
you got 24 seconds. Was he the best tight end ever?
No, I don't need all 24 seconds. I will say this, he's on that top shelf. Shannon Sharp, our own Shannon Sharp. Tony Gonzalez, our own Tony Gonzalez. Damn, Gronk, come work with us. Who else? Jason Witten. I've seen some boys.
He's better than Jason Witten.
You can say that, but I had to go against him. I respect run blocking, and guess what? Gronk got turned into a run blocking tight end this year, and you got to respect both components. He's up there on the top shelf, but to say he's number one, I think is a little disrespect to other guys.
Time's up. You got best tight end ever?
Earlier today, I was with Tony. After sitting back and looking at all these numbers that he has and the fact that he missed 29 games, I hate to say it, but I got to go with Gronk. I believe he is. Even the fact that he only did 9 years, with that said, he still got massive numbers with missing 29 games. If you take everything and you break it down, his numbers are 1 and 2 in almost every category.
Yeah, for 9 years, but the availability
exactly,
counts.
Exactly, the availability
counts.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that's where I'm going with this. Start the clock. Yeah. Availability is the most important ability.
Say it.
He wasn't available as often as Tony Gonzalez, Kellen Winslow. I would put ahead of him.
Kellen
Shannon
Winslow, you put him ahead of him?
Kellen Winslow.
Senior.
Yes,
okay.
Junior.
You talking about he's a junior?
Whoa. Kellen Winslow.
Not the homie.
Shannon Sharp, there's an argument about.
Oh, Shannon was
that's close.
But Rob Gronkowski, the best ever? No.
Yeah.
All right. Well, after Gronk retired, rumors started flying he could unretire, with his agent Drew Rosenhaus saying it wouldn't shock him if Gronk returned at some point this year. All right, Marcellus, you got 24 seconds. Is Rob Gronkowski done?
Yeah, he's done. Think about how this has come down in terms of timeline. They tried to trade him. He didn't want that to happen. All the injuries to the point where they're really changing your position. You're a run-blocking tight end. They actually draft run-blocking tight ends versus pass-catching tight ends. And then, most importantly, you know what starts to happen after that? That your playing time may be affected. You're not available. You're not the same player. You're falling down the hill. I think the ego was bruised in this moment, and Gronk realized he couldn't be the old Gronk. Why not keep that brand translated somewhere else? He's done.
James? I think he's done simply because he's hurt. I believe, as you saw over the course of this year, he had back surgery. I know that feeling. 6-9 months out, it's a horrible feeling hitting the ground trying to get up. I think the fact that he changed a little bit of his training, he wasn't doing a lot of weight room training where he has to actually go in and take that run of weight force, and he's in a position where he has to physically dominate a person, play in and play out. You can't go in and just do band training. You have to be able to take that weight. And I think right now his body is hurting, and he's like, you know what, I'm done. I don't want to feel that anymore.
Two back surgeries.
All right, get the clock going here on time. Gronk is not done. Rosenhaus wouldn't be opening his mouth right now and even suggesting that he might come back if he were done. What Gronk is doing is what a lot of older players love to do, miss training camp. And what a lot of NBA players are starting to do, miss part of the regular season and just be there for the end of the season. What the hell else is Rob Gronkowski going to do? Go be a college professor?
Wrestler.
No. Yeah, that's probably more dangerous than football. Yeah. Rob Gronkowski will be back at the end of this season. All right, to the competition committee who proposed expanding the league's office's power to eject players. As it stands now, the league can only eject players over non-football incidents, but the new rule would expand that to flagrant football plays as well. Marcellus, is handing more ejection power to the NFL, is this a good idea?
No, horrible idea. Too many questionable calls as is. Too many times you see the subjective get, they go out there and they do it the wrong way. I just don't want to open up their power and their opportunity to really eject a player in a moment. When you come back, you look at it, you review it, and you realize, oh, that was the wrong decision. So we've already saw them with a little power misuse that. Why give them more power? No, bad look.
All right, James, let's wait a beat here. Just wait a beat because they have the clock. We need the clock to catch up.
I don't even need the clock for this. I totally agree with him with everything he said. You're giving him too much power. You're going to go and you're going to review something. You're going to slow it down to within one thousandth of a second and say, oh, he could have did this, he could have did that. Your body doesn't react that fast. It's not going to happen. To give him that much power is ludicrous. It's out of control.
All right, reset the clock.
Oh, you got 10 seconds left.
Yeah.
He's shooting threes over here, man. Why don't you drive to the basket?
Reset. Look, this is stupid. Mm. This is absolutely asinine. Football is an emotional game. And occasionally, you're going to go over that emotional line. If we're going to try to remove all the emotion out of football, we might as well just, because this is a rule mostly directed at defensive players, mm-hmm. the emotional side of the game. And now we're going to start tossing guys out of the game. Are you kidding me? The fans paid money to see them perform. The guys prepare all week. This is stupid. Don't do it.
Wave that. Wave that. This.
There's also a proposed change to the onside kick rules, which would allow teams to forego a kickoff once per game in the fourth quarter and instead have the option to run a fourth and 15 play from their 35-yard line. Marcellus,
yeah.
Straight from the AAF.
It is.
You like this idea?
I love this idea. I want it to be exactly like the AAF. Move it back. Not the 35, but they do it in AAF to the 28. Dude, I'd rather walk through the alleys of Compton in 1989 than go through onside kick or kickoff. Those are the most violent plays in football. Onside kick is where a lot of the injuries occur. I know I got knocked out.
Oh, come on.
Bro, not an onside. How many people you done seen get carried off an onside kick?
Have you ever done? Have you ever?
Yes.
Well, other than you. Somebody.
Yes.
Seen anybody get hurt on
man, I got destroyed on that. No, sir. I don't want that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, no. It's a horrible idea. I think that's the worst thing they could ever do. On a fourth, you going to give me the either kick. I got to do an onside kick anyway, but you go give me a chance for a fourth and 15?
Yeah, fourth and 15.
You know what I can do on a fourth and 15? I could have my quarterback run around like a madman. I could pitch pass everything back and forth. No, I don't like it. It takes everything out of the game. That's something that, like you said, that's for the AAF. That's for a new league that's starting up trying to get somebody to watch it.
Whoa.
All right, let's start the clock here because
you need all
this is a really, really stupid idea.
How?
Fourth and 15.
Yeah.
When they call the illegal contact 5-yard automatic first down. Some sort of fluke penalty.
Yeah, that
automatic first down, and then you got a conversion. If you want to fix the onside kick, back the receiving team up 10 yards and still you and make it a free-for-all to get that
no,
football.
That's no, dangerous.
They moved it.
That's dangerous
but
right there.
Yeah, that's what they used to do.
I like some dangerous.
The new
20 yards.
I hate the new onside. Now you can't get a running start. But the old onside was gangster.
Finally to Pittsburgh, where Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert is standing behind Big Ben saying he's our quarterback and our leader after Ben got roughed up in the media by some former teammates last week. Marcellus, will the Steelers regret siding with Big Ben?
What else they gonna do? I mean, the other two killer bees are gone, so you better go all in on the one you have, the one in your hand, because the two in the bush are gone, departed. So, look, it's amazing that they're all in on Big Ben, but they're not all in on Big Ben, because in the NFL, we talk through dollars. Where's my contract extension if you really believe in me, if you really love me? So right now, a lot of verbiage, but we're not hearing the money to support that. But you got to do it. You have no choice.
Yeah,
James, will they regret going all in on Big Ben?
No, they won't. They won't regret going all in on Big Ben. You know, he's a great quarterback. He's going to be a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, and he still has the abilities to go out there and get it done. I think the reason they're taking so long is they realize this is going to be his last contract, and they're trying to make sure that they get a deal that is Steeler friendly, I guess you would say, or, you know, he willing to take one for the team, so to speak.
Oh, he ain't taking nothing for the team.
Mm.
And I do think they're going to regret this. I really do. And not because they're sticking with Big Ben the way they're going about it. Put some pressure on Big Ben. Quit treating him like he can't handle any internal criticism. Treat him like one of the other 53 players and put some of this blame for the chaos and dysfunction on Ben. You don't have to cape up and treat him like he's a little baby seal that if you touch him in any way, he's hurt. Whitlock and Wiley, James Harrison is back with us. Time to get antisocial. I got my Twitter off here. Darnell Smith, our social media manager, Big Swole.
Yes, sir.
That's kind of silly with James sitting here.
Silly?
Me and Big Swole sitting here.
I bought you a shirt too, man.
Okay, I appreciate it. Okay. I appreciate it.
He's shooting shots.
Yeah, James benched 500 over the weekend, Darnell.
What you do?
What you do?
I'm in the 435 range myself.
What do you mean range?
You know,
range.
What's your max?
How is that a range?
Yeah, what range is that?
Yeah, what's your max? About 435 range.
435 to 500, that's a good range.
That's a good range.
What's popping on these Twitter streets?
Yeah, we're going to start off with OBJ, who just last week said he was taking a break from social media. Mm-hmm. Well, he must have had a change of heart because yesterday afternoon, he challenged his inner Baker Mayfield, tweeting out, "I ain't going to lie, I woke up feeling dangerous. Browns fans love this, making all types of gifts, showing their excitement for the new superstar."
Yeah.
But, guys, you think OBJ is over the Giants breakup?
Over the Giants breakup, I think he's addicted to social media like crack cocaine.
Crack.
He put out some long post. I'm taking a break from social media.
He said a few days in the post, too. He even said it then. He said a few days.
It's been a few days.
But this is when Twitter goes wrong, when people just start telling you the mundane things. Like, I ain't gonna lie, when somebody wakes up like, feeling great today, I'm like, dog. And then what's worse.
You need something to say.
You need something to say. And he be getting 100 million, trillion replies or retweets. I've been like, just saying I feel dangerous. More power to you, brother, but I ain't feeling this. Whatever.
New team. You got to put the word out there. You got to let them know how you're feeling. You got to get your fans involved into it. He got a whole new.
When you went to the Patriots, that's what you did.
When I went to the Patriots, listen, I'm all in. I was all in.
Did you tweet that? I'm all in.
First picture, me and TB, me and Tom.
That's true.
I'm all in.
That's true.
Look, man. What was Chris Rock's character in New Jack City?
Pookie.
That's who LBJ is when it comes to Twitter.
He's
all powdery.
Give me my turkey.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, man, moving on to some NBA hoops, where James Harden continued his dominant season on Friday, dropping 61 points against the Spurs. But what really had people talking was his post-game workout. It's not too often you see a star player working out after a performance like that, but not everyone was impressed. One person on Twitter compared Harden's body to rapper Childish Gambino. I'm going to pass to you, James. Were you impressed by this?
Me personally, I won't say that I was impressed because I feel like everybody should be in the weight room as soon as you get done, you know, playing any sort of game to help rebuild everything that you...
Immediately after?
I used to get off the plane at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning and go straight to the gym. So I'm impressed that, yeah, he's doing it. But as far as being, like, impressed, I've done it for years.
What about his technique?
He got great technique. He got great technique.
Hold on, but people are watching the show. Is that healthy? For the average person.
Whitlock asking, is it healthy?
The average athlete is not the average person.
Okay, I got it, but I'm just saying to the public that's watching.
He has all the people. Look at it, he got a trainer there. He has all the people and everything that he needs to do to repair his body. So that what he's
after
doing
after playing a 2-hour basketball game, you should go straight to the weight room.
He didn't go get an IV, he didn't get vitamin
go
fluid,
get it.
He didn't get a rub down, a massage, acupuncture, drying something.
What I like is that he's mindful that he's hit the wall the last 2-3 years in the playoffs, and this is a guy who's like, I'm gonna go extra right now so I could be ready for that extra run in the playoffs. So at least he's mindful of that. I like that part.
This kind of I'm not even gonna crack the joke. Go ahead.
What movie?
All right. Moving on to the Alliance of American Football, where 1 week after signing with the Memphis Express, former Cleveland Brown quarterback Johnny Manziel made his AAF debut. Johnny was mic'd up after the game, and it's safe to say he has not changed a bit. Take a listen.
He came through, causing the step up and move.
You wanna start that way? We can go. I'll turn up on your You wanna start that way? We can go. I'll turn up on your
Does that sound like an NFL quarterback to you?
It sounds like Johnny Manziel.
I've never had a quarterback say anything like that to me.
Never?
Because repercussions and consequences. No, never. You can't talk to me like that.
James.
Come on. How can you let a quarterback talk to you like that? Like, it's just that.
Have you heard him talk like that before as a conversation? He may not have said James. Have you heard a quarterback?
Phillip Rivers.
No. Well, he doesn't curse. But he'll give you everything but the curse word.
Phillip was real nice to me.
Yeah.
I hit him. Well, they called it a late hit. I didn't see it as a late hit. And he didn't see it as a late hit. He said, I slid too late. You're right.
And he defended me on that, but they still called it.
They didn't call it a late hit?
No, they called it a late hit still, but yeah. He defended me.
Only
on
you
it.
Saw it different?
He saw it different. So he said, I slid late.
Johnny you know? Manziel has learned nothing based off this video.
Man.
He got no humility.
Man, his cachet is burnt. Like, I mean, just talking about from the best to the worst. Like, I don't even care about Manziel anymore. And I used to love this dude. Like, I rooted for his way. Like, mm-hmm. Do it your way.
Right.
Go out there and ball out. Be the little train that could. And now it's just like, who cares? So even when he goes this lane, doesn't resonate with me.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, we're going to move on to my guy, Kobe Bryant.
My guy.
Whose wife, Vanessa, is pregnant with their fourth daughter. But the NBA legend said that his wife would love to have a baby boy at some point, saying, quote, I think she wants a boy more than I do. She wanted a boy so he can be mama's boy forever. We'll see if I can deliver. Social media loved this, and the fans showed their support by commenting on how clutch Kobe is. He's expecting his fourth kid, but he has 5 rings. So do y'all think Kobe will end up with more kids than rings?
Yeah, I do. I don't think he's going to stop anytime soon. And I guarantee you, he wants a boy.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. Because, you know, no telling. He might be better than Kobe.
I had 2 teammates, Andre Reed, Thurman Thomas. 4 girls, all in that attempt to get that boy. Them girls keep adding up, right? They got some kind of like procedure out there that can tell you genetics, and, you know, tell you the gender.
It's a process where you can try and pick.
You can kind of pick it, right?
You know, he might not want to go that way. He got that mama mentality. He gonna do it himself.
Okay. Go have 11 girls.
Hey, it could happen. I know somebody had 6, I believe it was. All Ooh. Girls in the attempt trying to get the boy and never got the
yeah.
Got him.
Kobe's gonna get it done. That's my prediction.
Make your shot, Kobe. Make your shot. Shoot your
All right,
shot.
Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, saving the best for last. Dr. Dre joked in the Instagram post last week that his daughter got accepted to USC all on her own. No jail time. Unlike some other celebrity children in the news lately. But social media was quick to sip the haterade by pointing out that Dre was part of a $70 million donation to the school 5 years ago. Dre subsequently removed the Instagram post. Does Dre deserve as much hate?
Yes.
He removed it?
$70 million? You gave $70 million talking about your daughter got in school all by herself. I shouldn't even have to put in a letter. Y'all should automatically be like, yeah, she just need to be at school on Monday.
Take her straight out of preschool.
Right, what are you talking about?
Yeah, he kind of brought this on himself in the sense of saying, you know, no jail time, which is a poke at them. But then the reason they did it in the first place is like, we want to skip spending $70 million and get a guarantee that my kid going in for $400,000.
$500,000.
Once you open up the jokes, they coming back.
That's what you just described as hustling backwards.
Yes.
He gave up $70 million. They gave up $500,000.
But he did it the legal way.
He did
it the legal way.
Oh, I respect
him. But again, if you're a member of NWA and all that stuff they rapped about, he should be the one hustling his kids in the school rather than give him $70 million. But I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a huge Dre fan.
Oh, I love him to death.
Huge Dre fan.
And they're independent. What he did, he gave to the school in terms of art and music.
Uh-huh.
And then, my daughter gets in, and he wants to give her some love, and IG don't let that happen. They ain't let that
happen.
All right, Darnell, let's get to Darnell's question of the day.
Damn.
Take it away.
Nothing good.
All right, guys, so watching the NCAA tournament this weekend, you get to see the reactions of both winners and losers. So I want to ask you guys, from your experiences, do you learn more from winning or from losing?
That's a good question.
For me, I think I've learned more from losing. It shows me where I went wrong. When you win, you don't tend to concentrate on the things you did bad, on where you could have got a lot better. And it doesn't drive you as much as losing does.
For me, I paid attention more when we lost, but I learned more from winning. Because think about it, climbing up the hill to even be who we were, which is 1 in a million in the league, all those successes, those dominoes were falling in success to get us to that place. So your work ethic, you get a strong work ethic when you go out there and destroy a workout, you feel good, you get that esteem from it. I'm first in the gassers, I'm best in the bench press, whatever those things are, all of those successes lead us to there. But then we get to a point where we need to be challenged and we probably listen more in those moments once
Well,
we
I think that's the thing before the chicken, what came first?
Yeah,
the egg.
Yeah, I get
you
that.
Have to fail in order to be able to, you know, have something to drive towards to cross over that boundary and succeed at.
But there's no James Harrison without way more wins than losses. Think about it, James, in totality.
If you never lose, what?
No, I get it, but you have not lost much more than you've won. You've won and you've almost put that in the bank. Like,
but
my
I
wins
think I learned more from but the you, losses.
Yeah, yeah, because it's rare.
I think you learn more in defeat than in success. Because I think success a lot of times will convince you that a lot of the bad things you're doing aren't really bad things. Mm-hmm. And again, I apply that just to my journalism career. My greatest learning moments came after my failure at ESPN. And I had to sit back and evaluate, well, damn, what things had I been leaning into that actually weren't a part of my success and rise that were a part of my failure? And it wasn't until I failed that I discovered those things. That's why I look at a lot of athletes that survive off of natural talent and then conclude that a lot of, you know what, I smoke all this weed, that's actually a good thing. It's like, no. That weed is actually potentially holding you back and a bunch of other things you're doing that you've been getting away with that you never
Maybe we're
out.
Saying the same thing, but look, you were at ESPN and you had your own division and then it didn't work out the way you intended and then you said, wake up call or let me address some things. Don't forget all of that that you accumulated and it got to. That's what I'm saying. Like, we forget those parts.
I agree, but I
you kept working on your journalism to get there.
What I've tried to do, though, is discard the things that I had been doing on the way to success that had nothing to do with my success, that I had concluded. Yeah. Oh, this is part of my success.
It's part of your success,
right.
Huh?
Yeah, and it's not.
Not that Vegas part. That didn't help. And it finally caught up to it.
Whitlock and Wiley, joined now by longtime NBA player Ketino Mobley. Let's move to Lonzo Ball, whose roller coaster of a second season just hit a new low. This weekend, a report surfaced that the Lakers point guard cut ties with one of the co-founders of the Big Baller brand after Ball's financial advisors discovered that $1.5 million in cash went missing from the company's accounts. After the report surfaced, Lonzo took to Instagram writing, quote, "Moving on to bigger and better, hashtag my own man." Today, ESPN's Ramona Shelbourne reported that the Ball family is thinking about folding the company altogether. This is inevitable. I'm not remotely shocked or surprised. I think there was a lot more bluster and hype to the Big Baller brand than actual business plan and vision of, you know, this is a classic case, and I've done it most of my life. I've bitten off more than I can chew. And LeVar bit off more than he could chew here, and they're choking on it right now.
Yeah. Oh, man, business 101, maybe the first day of class, they'll tell you, most businesses fail. Remember that. If you look at this situation, I don't think they're dead. I don't think it was inevitable. I just say this. There is a nail in the coffin, and there's a hammer in the air, and they're trying to connect, but he's going to have to change the model. Simple as that. Don't be celebrity-driven. Big Baller brand doesn't need his son necessarily. You're going to have to be a more effective, efficient model. And maybe you have to go under the radar and just put out great products, service to people. A lot of complaints out there. But if you look at it in totality, this is a situation that came from a great spirit. Maybe not the greatest business acumen. Maybe not the greatest fulfillment. But something that was trying to disrupt. And so the intentions were great. But I didn't think it was inevitable. I thought they were on to something. There's certainly still a void in the marketplace. Why did it get so much attention? Why did even Nike and Adidas take some interest in this? Because they know there's a hole in the marketplace, a void that they were trying to fill. Maybe the next company would learn from them and do the same.
Well, you know, just think about, what, Lee Ning, right? Dwayne Wade's company.
Oh, yeah.
Under Armour started back when I first started in the league.
Exactly, same here.
And then the multi-billion dollar company. I just think for me, one is you were in a good place when you thought about this whole brand. I understand that, owning your own company, right? LeVar Ball. But the way he went about it and to hire someone, not doing background checks on that person, I think he just...
They may have done a background check. He didn't care.
Well, probably, you're right. You probably so. He stressed himself too thin, right? You got the son over here. You take this son out of college. You do this. You do that. You're not worried about your money. To even get Big Baller brand, it has to come from something. I just can't make something up. So you used your kid. You used Ball, the brothers, the boys, Chino Hills. You used all that. And it's kind of like you put things in so many different places... that you forgot about it. The most important thing. And then that's like taking care of the brand of your boys, right? Like Lonzo is like left alone, basically. While all this is happening, you over here with your one son in prep school and the other guy. It's like you're doing so much. You need to concentrate on one thing, finish it out, and then move to the next. And he stretched himself too thin for me. And now you got this guy, Alan Foster, who basically is a thief.
But it's interesting. You're looking at it through a business lens, and you're right. You should have fulfilled whatever Lonzo needed, even at the pro level, if this is really your star of your brand. Right. But it's crazy. He was facing criticism, LaVar Ball, when he was leaving college. Will he leave him alone? Will he allow Lonzo to succeed and fail independent of Big Baller Brand or his father's leaning over him? And it's crazy. He allowed that, and he did that, and that's actually undermined.
I don't like the logo, and the shoes cost too much. Are we
serious? They cost too much. They cost too much. And I bought all of them, and they cost too much.
I'm just going to use LaVar's own words, and I don't mean this with any malicious intent, but he came on this network and told someone to stay in their lane. And he didn't even take his own advice.
Right.
Because, again, there's nothing about LaVar Ball that screams, I should be the CEO of a company that's going to disrupt Nike and Adidas.
Right.
Have realistic dreams, aspirations, and goals. You know, you can't. There's no shortcuts to the top of the mountain.
You got to stay on the radar.
Make some reasonable goals. And again, your reasonable goals, like, I got a 19-year-old son going into the NBA. Just let him conquer that.
Yes.
There are a lot of 19-year-olds that fail in the NBA.
Right.
Before we start, and he's going to be the face of a brand that takes on Nike and Adidas and everybody else.
Right.
It's all unrealistic.
You're so right.
And for me, I could just see it coming again. It's start out small and build to something big. Real bad boys move in silence. Mm. And there's never been anything silent about LaVar.
You know what's crazy? Investors will always tell you one of the questions they ask someone or something that they're investing is, and they will say, will you die if this fails? Will you be hurt? Will you be life-changing and altering if this fails? Mm-hmm. He was never in that position. So you got to think about it, business-to-business model. They were looking at this like, this is not going to work. But I'm going to read you something that this is what it is in short, the narrative. Such an innovative, disruptive concept to be applauded and supported. Yet the narrative of Big B, Triple B, will be that the hands of the naysayers and the black male stereotypes have come to life again. Mm-hmm. That's where I don't want it to land. This was smart. He didn't go about it the right way, and I think that's where the intelligence is lost, in your team concept and in your execution. But in terms of what he was thinking to do, someone's coming to do exactly what he did, but do it better.
And that's just funny, because I wrote that same thing about hiring another black brother to be able to help do X, Y, and Z and have black excellence or whatever it is that you strive for, which that I'm thinking, Alan Foster. But then now the guy goes and he takes 1.5.
I don't see anything, LaVar's failures or success, the way he's conducted. I don't see it saying anything about black people or black men.
You don't think so?
No.
I think a lot of the attention that was negative towards him was like, oh, this brother's coming out and he's being loud, the boisterous, the behavior was embodying. You know. Well, it is him, but he was representing to a lot of the naysayers. Right?
No matter what we know, what they see.
What they see.
The eye test is, oh, he's black. Oh, he's a black father. He's boisterous. He's loud. He's rambunctious. He's this. They're doing that.
And he started a company. He hired a homie.
There's 400 black guys in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I can only think of one LaVar Ball. There's 1,300 black dudes in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I don't know any LaVar Balls.
We're talking about starting companies, too.
I know, he seems like such an outlier that I just don't see the connection. Mm-hmm. He's so different. LaVar Ball is just off in his own little space to me.
I hope that's where it lands. It's just another failed company versus, he did it. Brother did
it. Yeah, it's a million companies that fail.
Yeah.
Is this potentially the end of the LaVar Ball phenomenon?
I hope so. So Lonzo Ball, because I love Lonzo Ball.
Yep.
I love his skill set. He's one of my favorites. And he hasn't got he hasn't got the chance yet to show everyone how good he really is, because his father is a bigger star than him, or wants to be a bigger star than him. It's like, I want to promote my son, but look at me. I'm doing this, but look at me. I love my son so much, buy my brand. Like, it's just like, I don't enjoy that part. I understand your intentions, or at least I hope I want to understand that your intentions are good. But the way you're doing them, to me, it's not genuine, because it's a hidden agenda behind it. Do you know what I mean? It's to me.
Well, for me, I have to separate the signal from the noise. The greatest promotional tool Lonzo had was just going out there and balling. He didn't do that. So regardless of how your dad takes your balling and then translates that for the world and how we interpret it, just ball. Like that's been your father your entire life.
That's so hard.
Why is it so hard? You've been doing it your whole life?
But Marcellus, hold on. The Lakers, according to the reports here recently, are questioning Lonzo's the health of his ankles and knees because of the shoes he's wearing.
Right. Questioning, right?
Yeah, they
like there's no ankle injuries with Nike. Hey, just blow out.
Did you guys get it? The janitor sneakers?
I have every one of them.
You got them?
And I don't play basketball at a high level, but they feel good walking.
You walk around in them?
I can walk around.
Your knees and back don't hurt?
No, not at all. No. So I'm not going there. But look, every shoe blows out. Every shoe, every
Nike just had a shoe blow out on Lonzo.
Yeah. So I don't.
300 pounds.
And another thing that. The $1.5 million that you lost. Oh, here we go. Athlete after athlete is getting taken for their money. Smart athlete, dumb athlete. You can look at Bernie Madoff and what occurred on that list of people he got. Mm-hmm. Smart people. Like, let's just be careful of where we land on.
And that's another thing. That's what I said too. I did five different frauds of 2018. Mm. Elizabeth Holmes, right? Elizabeth Holmes. She was supposed to be the next Steve Jobs. Fraud, right? Billions of dollars. Yeah. Fraud. Lost $1 billion. Then you have the there's a bank CEO, $234 billion. Money launder. That happens. We understand all that. But I'm talking about LaVar Ball and what he has done. I feel I'm happy for Lonzo. He has a son now. He can be his own man.
Yeah, I love that.
And then, like, stay out of his way. Let that man grow now by himself. You did enough. Let it go.
Yeah.
Let him do him.
I go back to what I've said from the beginning of this. You raise a child, in my view, so that when they leave the nest, they can take care of themselves.
There you go.
There's no greater comfort for a parent when they can go to sleep and go, my kid's got
this. Yeah.
He's good.
They're good.
Yes.
They're good.
I've done my job.
Good.
And that's where I didn't see. And look, 19 is a very young age for a kid to be pushed out of the nest. But that is, he's joining the NBA, and that's almost like joining the military. It's like, you gotta be your own man when you make those kind of choices. You chose to play basketball.
Kobe did it.
Yeah,
with his parents.
He did with his parents.
He actually pushed them, like, I'm cool. Listen, I don't wanna hear nothing else, Mom. Me and Vanessa, like, I'm cool. Let me do me. But Kobe was on another level, too.
Yeah.
It's like the Ball Boys, they're like mutes. No one speaks. Dad speaks all the time. You can't play. I don't care what you say you used to do.
I don't know.
You can't.
Melo does speak, but Melo hears it back too.
Yeah, right.
Melo go at it. Didn't
All right, coming up.
You need to censor him.
Let's return to the NBA, where LeBron and the Lakers are limping to the end of the season, and wild speculation is already flying about who will be the team's next head coach. According to a new report from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, Jason Kidd would be, quote, a serious candidate for the job if Luke Walton is fired, as everyone seems to expect. I'm not the big fan of this. I like Jason Kidd, had high hopes for him as an NBA head coach. But, man, he had problems in college.
Yeah.
Disruptor. He's had some problems in his personal life with law enforcement. He got run out of Brooklyn a little early. His friends hired him in Milwaukee. They soured on him. Now you're going to come to L.A.?
His best friends.
Yeah.
That was his best friends, the owner.
Yeah, and then you leave Milwaukee with a losing record, and then all of a sudden they got the best record in the league, Giannis, the MVP candidate. Like, things just I don't like this, and it also it fits on brand with the Lakers, who are always fame-laced in all their decisions.
Right.
Like, they just want to – it has to pop. It just can't be whatever. But at the same time, I just don't see it fitting with LeBron having three more years remaining. Jason Kidd comes in. There have been question marks on top of everything you said. Him in the huddle. People said X's and O's wise. Like, he had to improve, and he did, but he's still not the most astute in basketball translation.
What's really funny You guys make great points. What's really funny is Jason, to me, is, and I said this earlier, Jason, to me, is the second best point guard next to Magic Johnson. He was so good on the court. Now, when he played with Carmelo Anthony a few years back, several years ago in New York, he's amazing. Dirk Nowitzki, he's amazing. He's Jason Kidd, right? Even when he won rookie of the year, he was 11 points, 7, 6, whatever it was. Wasn't great, but he's a fuller general. Now, when it comes to X's and O's, we all knew that in the NBA. You're not really good drawing them up. But when you're on the court, it's totally different. Mm. That's probably why your guys from Milwaukee, your best friends, hired you, because it's like they're going on how you played. Just because how you played, that doesn't mean you're a great coach, Magic Johnson, right? I love you to death, but you weren't a great coach, right? So Jason Kidd to me, no way, no how when it comes to Jason Kidd being a Lakers
coach. Here's what I think they're thinking, though. I think LeBron and the narrative on LeBron is the coaches he would work easiest with are former players.
Uh-huh.
And so I think they're looking for, like, in their view, and I'm not saying Jason Kidd but they're looking for a better version of Tyronn Lue. Yeah. And that I think LeBron has told people, I really like working with Tyronn Lue. Maybe I should have stuck with it. Can we find a better version of Ty Lue? And Jason Kidd's playing resume is better than Tyronn Lue's.
But not coaching. Right.
And
right.
not as a student.
Luke Walton's a former player. That doesn't count.
But how about this one?
With a resume.
Yeah, but okay. You know, but the funny thing.
Lue's resume on the court is better.
But check this out. True. LeBron got about what, 4 more years?
Yeah. Three on his contract.
Three more years on his contract. 4 more years of maybe 2 or 3 years of excellence.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now think about Tyronn Lue. When he came to LeBron, LeBron had about 7, 8 years left. So you have patience. Lakers ain't going for that patience. So if you bring in Jason Kidd and y'all don't do well next year, then what you gonna do? So I'd rather bring Tyronn Lue in because Tyronn Lue understands LeBron James, his mood swings, you know, and all that old crazy stuff that comes along with LeBron.
What about Mark Jackson?
I love Mark Jackson.
I think Mark Jackson is the ultimate alpha. And Mark Jackson's vision and personality is too powerful for what Magic and those guys can handle. I think Mark Jackson would be a good candidate. Mm-hmm. But, you know, LeBron should go back to Miami and work with Pat Riley. Uncle Jimmy's here. You have any thoughts for today?
Yes, sir. I'd like to just get straight to the big dummy of the day award.
Yeah.
This weekend while watching Netflix, I was looking at a documentary by Mark Sargent. Talking about the flat earth. Midway through the movie, who did I see? Our very own Mark Ellis Wiley.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so I'd like to get a big dummy of the day to the only person up here on this set that don't know that the earth is flat. You, my nephew.
The only person that don't know is flat? Ow! He flipped that on me.
Earth is not flat.
I don't know. Well, you don't know either.
you headed to the moon tonight.
Yeah, let us know. Yeah.
Hey, I'm just letting you know I'm just not getting back. You know?
All right. Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Rob Gronkowski. Rob Gronkowski, the best ever? No. Availability is the most important ability. He wasn't available as often as Tony Gonzalez, Kellen Winslow.
He's on that top shelf. Shannon Sharp, our own Shannon Sharp. Tony Gonzalez, our own Tony Gonzalez. Damn, Gronk, come work with us.
All right, Uncle Jimmy. Gronk has announced his retirement. What's your take?
I don't believe in retirement. Uncle Jimmy's well into his AARP years. And you ain't gonna never see me without multiple jobs. I guess you could say that I'm a born-again paper chaser. You understand what I'm saying?
Hey, Uncle Jimmy about the alimony, too, huh? Get that money.
Hey, man, if you don't mind your business.
But that's...
Hey, well, let me tell you something. I don't know what part of Compton you from, but where I'm from, snitches get stitches. End up in ditches. And we treat them like they bunch of balloons.
Stop it.
Hey, what you think I was going to say?
Balloons.
Hey, man, you better get your boy, man. I'm for real. Hey, man, he up here, man, we on national TV. He up here talking about my personal business like that.
A little bit.
Look, man, you do have a lot of ex-wives and stepkids and a few of your own, you know. Is that why you won't retire?
Okay, let me ask you a question. Is we not talking about Rock on Crown?
Yes, we is.
It don't cost a dime to stay the hell out of mine, am I right? Personally, man, I ain't got no respect for a man who ain't got 2 jobs. Retirement is for dead people. every healthy man in America need at least two jobs.
All right.
What Gronk gonna do? Just sit up and scream, white boy wasted and drink beer all day?
He put together a Hall of Fame career. Beast.
He's 29 years old. Mm-hmm. You talking about a career?
Yeah.
Ain't nobody got no damn career at 29. He got a job and he quit. That's what he did.
He took care of his money. You sound a little bit jealous. A little jelly belly over there.
What the hell I got to be jealous about?
Still working.
You saying Uncle Jimmy wasted his money? Is that what you saying, Marcellus?
That
you all in these pockets?
That chain?
Boy, you ain't never walked a mile in these shoes.
Not them.
Have you ever fed and clothed five ex-wives? Average 5'6", 332 pounds. It's expensive.
They're getting bigger.
But listen, let me tell you something, boy. Look here, you don't know what it's like to come home from work and jump up in your woman's arms and have her carry you over to the couch. You don't know nothing about that kind of love. You can't put a price tag on that kind of love. And let me tell you something, Gronk will never know that kind of love. Or a good divorce attorney.
Don't hate the man because he made better decisions than you. Don't be hating.
Well, don't hate me because I done experienced everything that life done had to offer. And Gronk ain't made good decisions with his money. He just done made more money than me. That's it. Bottom line. Case closed.
Message.
Gronk is a lot like Uncle Jimmy. Most of y'all out there in America is like Uncle Jimmy. We spend our money on booze, women, and gambling. And then we waste whatever's left over.
That's the waste? You are dumb. That's the waste?
My approval rating.
That's the
for Rob. I got to think about that one.
Yeah, right.
Think about my approval. Look, that's Rob Gronkowski, I got him at 82. GOAT status, 20 job performance, 24 all-time greatness, 24 authenticity, 14 character. Drinks too much for me.
Party boy. Drinks too much for me. Hypocrites. Look at us. He's a GOAT to me. Respect him. He's top shelf. He's up there with a few other great tight ends, but can't knock the guy at all.
24 character, Marcellus?
I was going to go 25, but he does drink a little too much. The dude is who he is. He never, ever wavered in who he was. He was transparent. I love him, man.
He's Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, yeah.
With a little athletic build.
Yeah. A legend.
Frat boy wasted. Made it pro. Hall of Fame.
You off to Wakanda tonight or what, man?
You're going to jump on this Captain Airline and make it happen, baby.